This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over total knee arthroplasty in patella baja, as is seen in patients with prior HTO, from the recon section on orthobullets.com. Starting with a brief summary, total knee arthroplasty in patella baja is characterized by performing a total knee arthroplasty in a patient with a prior high tibial osteotomy that caused lowering of the patella relative to its normal position. Diagnosis can be made with plain radiographs of the knee showing an incel-Salvati ratio of less than 0.8. Treatment of patella baja in total knee arthroplasty involves various techniques including lowering the joint line, placing the patellar component superiorly, or performing a tibial tubercle transfer. In this episode, we will discuss the etiology, presentation, imaging findings, treatments, and techniques for total knee arthroplasty in patella baja. Regarding the etiology, the pathophysiology of acquired patella baja can be attributed to one of many common causes, which include proximal tibial osteotomy, tibial tubercle slide or transfer, trauma to the proximal tibia, technical errors during primary total knee replacement resulting in joint line elevation, and ACL reconstruction. Regarding proximal tibial osteotomy, patella baja is the most common complication seen following proximal tibial opening wedge osteotomy. This may be caused by shortening of the patellar tendon during tibial osteotomy or from scarring of the patellar tendon postoperatively. Conditions associated with patella baja include total knee arthroplasty, and patella infera is an important consideration when performing total knee arthroplasty. Improper techniques may cause patella baja, and special techniques must be utilized when performing TKA in patients with patella baja from congenital or acquired causes, such as patients who have acquired patella baja in tibial osteotomies and prior TKA. The clinical presentation of patients with patella baja includes symptoms of anterior impingement knee pain and knee stiffness. On physical examination, there is a mechanical block to full flexion, with flexion limited due to patellar impingement on the tibia in extremes of flexion. Reviewing imaging findings in patella baja, recommended views include an AP and lateral of the knee, with the lateral view of the knee in 30 degrees of flexion being used to measure the incel-Salvati ratio, which measures the ratio of the patellar length to the patellar bone length. The normal incel-Salvati ratio is 1:1 between the length of the patellar tendon and the patellar bone length. On the lateral view of the knee in extension, distal positioning of the patella in relation to the trochlear groove may be noted. An incel-Salvati ratio of less than 0.8 is consistent with patella baja. Treatment for patella baja may be non-operative or operative, with non-operative intervention being focused on activity modifications and physical therapy, which is indicated in the treatment of mild symptoms in younger patients. Operative intervention is with total knee replacement and is indicated in severe impingement in older patients with osteoarthritis. Our discussion on techniques will focus on total knee arthroplasty in patients with patella baja. Methods to address patella infera during TKA include placement of the patellar component superiorly, lowering of the joint line, transfer of the tibial tubercle to the cephalad position, and patellectomy. Placement of the patellar component superiorly is indicated in patients with mild patella baja. The technique used is to use a smaller patellar dome located on the superior aspect of the patella. The inferior bone of the patella should be trimmed to decrease flexion impingement. Lowering the joint line is indicated in moderate patella baja with a technique of adding distal femoral augmentation and cutting more proximal tibia to lower the joint line, i.e., lowering the tibial cut. Bone cuts that raise the joint line should be avoided, and raising the joint line will effectively increase the patella baja deformity. Lowering the joint line may require a revision knee system. Regarding tibial tubercle transfer to the cephalad position, this is indicated in moderate patella baja, but the technique is difficult due to a complexity of tibial tubercle transfer in proximity to a cemented tibial component. Outcomes of tibial tubercle transfer to a cephalad position are unpredictable, with unpredictable bone healing leading to variable and often poor outcomes, and patients may be left with an extensor lag. And lastly, patellectomy is indicated for severe patella baja. The technique for patellectomy involves altering the tension in the anterior knee mechanism, and it is therefore recommended to use a cruciate substituting knee system. In patients being considered for patellectomy, also consider a partial patellectomy in which the patella is resected to a width of 10 to 12 millimeters, which lessens impingement and crepitus while maintaining some of the fulcrum of the patella. Now that we've gotten a general overview of this topic, let's review a few questions to see how this information has been tested in the past. Question 1. A 40-year-old active male underwent a closing wedge high tibial osteotomy, or HTO, for early medial compartment arthritic changes. He presents 15 years later with tricompartmental arthritis. Which of the following findings is most consistent with his history? Answer 1. Caton-Deschamps ratio of 1.4. Answer 2. Blackburn-Peel ratio of 0.6. Answer 3. Insel-Salvati ratio of 0.7. Answer 4. Tibial tubercle trochlear groove, or TTTG, difference of 22 millimeters. Or answer 5. Patellar translation of 24 millimeters. The correct answer is 3. Insel-Salvati ratio of 0.7. Patella baja is most commonly associated with a prior HTO and can be problematic in patients undergoing total knee arthroplasty. For younger patients with early arthritic changes isolated to a single compartment wishing to avoid arthroplasty, a tibial or femoral osteotomy can be a durable option. A varus-producing femoral osteotomy is often warranted for genu valgum, whereas a valgus-producing high tibial osteotomy is often preferred in the setting of genu varum. It is important to obtain weight-bearing mechanical access films to evaluate the extent of the deformity. This is also critical when considering if a patient is indicated for a meniscal transplant. Lastly, patients with prior HTOs often develop patellar baja, which is partially attributed to the development of scar tissue or shortening of the patellar tendon during the osteotomy. Scuderi et al. Retrospectively reviewed the radiographs of 66 knees that underwent a prior HTO in order to determine changes in patellar height. They found that 76 to 89% of knees had patella baja, as measured by the Blackburn-Peel and IS index, respectively. They found no correlation between the degree of patella baja and a need for future conversion to total knee arthroplasty. Aglietti et al. Retrospectively reviewed the outcomes of HTOs in 120 knees at 10 to 21 year follow-up. After an average of 11 years, 30 knees were converted to TKAs. 19% of the knees showed patella baja in their study, which they found correlated with postoperative immobilization in a cylinder cast. Regarding the incorrect answers, a Caton-Deschamps ratio of 1.4 would indicate patella alta. Regarding answer 2, a Blackburn-Peel ratio of 0.6, this would indicate a normal patellar height. Answer 4, a TTTG difference of 22 millimeters may be expected in a patient with patellar instability. And answer 5, a patellar translation of 24 millimeters is incorrect, as you would expect limited patellar translation secondary to scarring and arthritic changes in this patient. Patellar translation greater than 20 millimeters is abnormal. Question 2. Patella baja is a known problem commonly encountered intraoperatively when converting which of the following patients to a total knee arthroplasty? Answer 1. Previous medial compartment unicompartmental arthroplasty. Answer 2. Previous medial proximal tibial opening wedge osteotomy. Answer 3. Previous lateral distal femoral closing wedge osteotomy. Answer 4. Previous patellofemoral unicompartmental arthroplasty. Or answer 5. Patella baja is not associated with any of the presented options. The correct answer is 2. Previous medial proximal tibial opening wedge osteotomy. Patella baja is often encountered during conversion from a high tibial osteotomy, proximal medial opening, or lateral closing, to a total knee arthroplasty. High tibial osteotomy has been well described as an effective procedure for treatment of medial compartment osteoarthritis of the knee, especially in young and active individuals. Potential causes of patella baja when converting a previous HTO to TKA include scarring from the previous surgery and shortening of the patellar tendon. Metting et al. Reported on the results of 39 bilateral TKAs at an average of 8.7 years after unilateral HTO. They concluded that despite preoperative alignment differences, the results of TKA in knees with and without a previous HTO are not significantly different. Wright et al. Assessed the patellar height and patellar ligament length pre- and postoperatively in 28 patients who underwent a medial opening wedge proximal tibial osteotomy for varus gonarthrosis. They found that 64% of patients met the radiographic criteria for patella baja postoperatively. They concluded that the high incidence of patella baja following medial opening wedge proximal tibial osteotomy may have deleterious effects on patellofemoral biomechanics or may complicate subsequent total knee arthroplasty. Regarding the incorrect answers, answers 1 and 4, a conversion from unicompartmental arthroplasties, either tibiofemoral or patellofemoral, has not been associated with patella baja. Answer 3, conversion of a previous lateral distal femoral osteotomy often results in patella alta, not baja. And answer 5 is incorrect, as patella baja is commonly encountered when converting a high tibial osteotomy, either medial opening wedge or lateral closing wedge, to total knee arthroplasty. Last question. A 25-year-old, healthy, active male undergoes lateral closing wedge high tibial osteotomy. Which of the following complaints is most commonly associated with this procedure? 1. Joint laxity. 2. Infection. 3. Anterior knee pain. 4. Quadriceps weakness. Or 5. Limb lengthening. The correct answer is 3. Anterior knee pain. The most common complaint associated with lateral closing wedge high tibial osteotomy is anterior knee pain. Lateral closing wedge high tibial osteotomies are commonly associated with anterior knee pain due to the high incidence of patella baja postoperatively. Patella baja is characterized by the lowering of the patella relative to its normal position, which is typically measured using the incel-Savati ratio of less than 0.8, with a normal ratio being between 0.8 and 1.2. The most common symptoms associated with patella baja include anterior impingement knee pain and knee stiffness. Scuderi et al. Evaluated the effect of proximal tibial osteotomies on patellar height in 66 patients. They found that patellar height decreased by 89% as measured by the Incel-Savati index and 76.3% as measured by the Blackburn-Peel index postoperatively. Wright et al. Reviewed the complications associated with lateral closing wedge and medial opening wedge high tibial osteotomies. They reported a 64% incidence of patella baja following these high tibial osteotomy techniques with associated complaints of anterior knee pain. Regarding the incorrect answers, knee stiffness, not laxity, is more common after high tibial osteotomy. Answer 2, the incidence of deep infection is roughly 0 to 4% in high tibial osteotomy. Answer 4, quadriceps weakness typically exists prior to high tibial osteotomy. And answer 5, leg shortening is more likely associated with lateral closing wedge high tibial osteotomy than leg lengthening. That is all for this review on patella baja and total knee arthroplasty. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or via the mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value so far from the OrthoBullets podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you are not already, please be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.